welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. Phone lines have been dumped. They are absolutely clear. You want to give us a call and talk about something that's going on in the market, in your portfolio, or some hot recommendation that a financial advisor or a phone solicitor has suggested you buy. Give us a call today, 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. If you don't want to do it on the air, then later on we have a webinar. We have Q&A after the webinar. That's not QAnon, that's Q and
yeah,
answers.
That's a whole different thing, yeah.
That is a whole different thing. Anyway, if you have not yet registered for today's stock market update, then you still have time to do so. Go to IRIradio.com, IRIradio.com, lower left-hand corner of the website, couple of clicks, your name and email, and you will receive a link to join us. The scheduled time is 15 minutes after our show is over today, and we are going to cover the major things we see going on in the market. Give you a broad description of how we generally look at the market instead of just saying, yeah, buy and hold. You know, market always goes up. Of course, when it doesn't, that's another problem. But you're in for the long haul, right? Except you're counting your long haul and you don't think it's all that long anymore. Well, that's why we do what we do, because none of us know how long is anymore, and we don't want to go backwards in our portfolios. So join us today for the webinar. Register at IRIradio.com. Well, there is, we personify a lot of things, one of which is the market, and we refer to the market when it does things as Mr. Market made up his mind. And he did on Thursday. He decided that COVID-19 is over. So the two hardest sectors of the market last year were energy and financials, because with an economic shutdown, nobody's going anywhere. So what do you need energy for? And if you're staying home, you can't go shopping for a house. You aren't buying a new car. So the banks aren't going to lend any money. And besides, you don't have a job, and they just think having a job is
there's always
is
that job thing. Yeah, that income thing's a big deal when you're in the borrowing line.
So the shutdown meant, if you were forecasting the future, that businesses and consumers were going bust. And unfortunately, many actually did. Banks were entities that loaned money to those groups. And so financials suffered. Tech, not so much, because we could still shop online.
Yeah. Grand discovery, and not only could shop online, people did shop online by in droves, and so that really did roll some monetary relief over to the tech sector.
And that basically continued until roughly September, end of the third quarter, and all of a sudden, we had some vaccines, and that meant, theoretically, you weren't going to have to stay home and live like a semi-prisoner, only allowed out if you had a permission slip to go out into the hall. Remember the old school program? Teacher, I have to go to the restroom. Well, you need a hall pass to be caught outside the classroom. And so we kind of needed a mask to be caught outside of the house. But anyway, in the fourth quarter, energy and financials began to come alive again, because suddenly we were going to be able to go places, and the banks were going to be able to look and find people actually had jobs again. Well, at least some of them, and that they could lend more money. And interest rates were rising, which is good for banks. So essentially, Mr. Market was saying that the COVID-19 problems have come to an end, or at least they're about to do so. And the Fed, oh yes, the Fed, Mr. Powell. What's another hundred? Would you guys like another $100 billion per month?
It's amazing.
Oh, and Mr. Biden said, "I don't think that's enough. We need to do another couple trillion. How about that?" And so we have an economy that over the next year is going to be sloshing in dollar bills. I don't know, maybe they're crypto. We can't see them. But anyway, one way or another, you'll end up with the theoretical greenbacks in your account. And we will have money, money, money. That's an old, that's a movie, right? Or a song. Money, money, money.
Money
makes the world go round.
That has really become the mantra in Washington, D.C. And that really started back in 08. You know, the last time the great financial crisis rolled through, and everybody thought that level of cash poured on the economy might have been a little overdoing it.
Obscene is the word, Perry. Obscene. That's what we thought it was.
And it worked. And then, of course, the next line was, well, now we're going to have runaway inflation, just hyperinflation for the next decade. It can't be avoided. That has to follow. Nah, didn't follow. So now that the fear of inflation is of rapid short-term inflation is gone, and the short-term money helped a great deal, it was like, well, okay, that's the process then. And so this time it's fire hose time, and they're really coming out with the big guns, and the cash is pouring on the economy.
So this is part of, and we're not going to try to explain, modern monetary theory.
Yeah.
Government can, John Maynard Keynes, the government can solve economic problems by just pumping money into the system. And so our current administration and the Fed have pretty well adopted that policy. We can fix anything. We just need to get back to 2% inflation, which, of course, they've been trying to do since 2008-09 bear market. And we have seen how effective the Fed is at getting that job done.
Right, right.
But I have one little brief rabbit trail today, Perry.
Go ahead.
We go back to the end of COVID-19 with Mr. Market. We go back a year, and for 3 months, Dr. Fauci said, nobody needs to wear a mask. This is not a big deal. And in fact, I've done research for 40 years on mask wearing, and it has no impact on the spread of flu. Doesn't matter. 3 months later, they threw away all the research they've done in four decades and said, well, you need to wear a mask. Besides, stay home. Don't go anywhere. Well, every consequence has an unintended consequence, right? It's action and reaction. You remember that from high school science. Mask are adding to trash and litter as we, listen to this, we discard 3 million masks a minute.
That's a big number. 3 million a minute.
Oof. It is becoming a massive trash nightmare. The researchers have figured out that heavy mask usage over the pandemic is creating an environmental disaster because local ecosystems are being polluted. The typical mask that people are wearing are made from plastic microfibers. Now, you know how well plastic recycles, yeah, right? I mean, nobody knows how to recycle them. There's no drop box for your infected mask anywhere. It just goes in the trash. So they end up in the solid waste pile.
I know it's not unusual already to see them in parking lots everywhere. In every parking lot, you're going to see masks lying around because they just bite the dust eventually.
Yeah, somebody pulls it off, or they drop it intentionally, and it laying there in the ground, and nobody wants to pick that thing up.
Yeah, no.
Right. Well, we're dealing with the Fed. You know, basically, the Fed has said they want the economy to grow by 6.5% this year. We would all like to see that.
That would be a good thing, yes. We all want that.
And as inflation fears have risen, interest rates are also rising in anticipation. And the Fed is saying, yeah, go back to sleep. Don't bother me with that. It's not a problem. Because next year, after this massive comeback from the whole of last year, we expect growth to drop to 3 and then fall to 2 in the following year. And then we're going to achieve our long-term goal. That's going to be 1.8. It's still below 2% average. The Fed cannot generate inflation. It does generate problems with all the money they're printing.
There are plenty of unintended consequences there too, and one of the primary ones is all the money that ends up in the market, bond market and the equity market, and it destroys what's called price discovery. No one knows what anything's actually worth anymore because the Fed's in there buying stuff at any price. Doesn't matter. This week we're buying, you know, XYZ bonds, and they go buy them. It doesn't matter what the price is. So it distorts, it badly distorts the market, and it doesn't let anyone see what organically usually occurs under the hood. It's just not happening right now. It's all been altered a great deal from the trillions of dollars that have been poured on the economy.
Well, we are doing the Japanification of our monetary system.
Yeah,
the Japanese central bank owns the majority. I mean, it's like 70-some-odd percent of Japanese stocks. And the majority of Japanese bonds. I mean, there just aren't very many Japanese citizens or businesses that participate in it for price discovery. Is this really a good price, or is this just what I get? And the Fed is doing that. In fact, the most sensitive interest rate indicator are inflation-protected treasuries. Mm. And recent data shows that the major buyer of those has been the Fed.
There you go. And you know, we're always saying, though, we're always telling everybody, don't forget, this is an auction market. It's an auction market. Well, imagine being in an auction when something comes up for sale, someone else walks in or the phone rings and they buy it. There's no bidding, you know, and so there's no chance to discover what the actual price is based on the market. Somebody else comes in and sets the price randomly, and that's what the Fed's doing right now. That's what they've been doing, and they keep doing more, and it just keeps distorting the market worse. And, we don't like it at all. It doesn't let things flow in the natural way that the markets do. Markets have a flow. There is an auction that goes on, and that's the way it's supposed to work, and that's been disrupted quite badly by the Fed.
So the way we look at this is with market-generated information. We want to look at what's the data that's actually coming out and try to get rid of opinion to the extent that we can. It's not that we don't have biases. Everybody does. But when it comes to running a portfolio, you should be relying most heavily on market-generated information. If you can't document it, don't do it.
That's the important way to look at it. I mean, and we do that all the time. We try to get our opinions and our emotions out of anything that happens in our portfolio because those are almost always wrong. You need the market-generated data. And if you'd like to see how we do that, right after the show today, we're having a webinar, April market update. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. Just go to IRIradio.com, go to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you will get an email response right back. And after the show's over, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us, and you'll be able to see the charts that we're talking about. We're going to give you some market update about where we are today, the way things are working, what we're doing with client portfolios. And we always have plenty of time for your questions. We like to get, it's a very good time for you to get questions answered about the market or the economy or individual securities. If you have a ticker you'd like us to take a look at, all we need to know is what that is. We'll give you our opinion on that live online. And it's a really, really good time to get some good information about current market conditions and get a second opinion on anything in your portfolio. Again, you can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we've got plenty of time to get your call up here, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help at IRIradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Hey, well, all right, Siri, here we go there. What are they going to give for? $500, $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, the $50 now, $60 will give me $60 now, $75, $75 another $85 on the bottom there.
Well, as Perry said in the last segment, the market is an auction market. At least that's what's supposed to go on. And while it does, it's just done electronically instead of the guys throwing stuff back and forth on the waving at each other across the floor.
It's nowhere near as much fun electronically, but that's the way it is. So
now you're watching the lights flash on your computer. That's a bid. That's an ask. But no, back and forth. Anyway. Gene's got a question from North Carolina. Gene, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Well, good to talk to both of you. I had a question. So with all this deficit spending, all this money that the U.S. Treasury is offering bonds, right, to finance all this deficit spending. So that increases the debt to GDP. I remember maybe 5 to 10 years ago that the bond rating firms slightly lowered the U.S. debt rating in debt sent temporarily.
Credit rating. The credit.
Credit rating. Thank you. Do you think that we're on the verge of having that happen again?
And not anytime soon. They subscribe to modern monetary theory, which raises another question. It's a rhetorical question, but if new debt and a massive amount of new debt. By the end of the year, we're going to be at $30 trillion. I mean, it'll have been up $13 trillion in a really short period of time. Just right. Massive. And everybody's saying, it doesn't matter. And we're saying, well, if that doesn't matter, I'm just asking, why are you raising taxes? I mean, why not just borrow more money? And why tax us? Just borrow more money and do what you want to do. We shouldn't have to pay taxes.
It's out of spite. it's out of spite for rich people.
That could be true, Gene. You may be onto something there. Yeah, it's like, we can, so we're going to, because we don't like you. So that's it.
We have to show we don't like someone.
That's true. That's the congressional way of a woke process, I guess.
I mean, you're right. In terms of just dollars and cents, it's really just collecting that extra tax is really just kind of spit in the ocean in terms of the amount of money it is versus what they're spending.
It really is. And the reason we probably, one of the reasons anyway, they're probably not going to downgrade their credit rating again is that outlook, that modern monetary policy outlook is pervasive. It's worldwide now, and everyone is out there, borrowing a ton of money and dumping money on the economy, and it's become, that's the thing to do. So we're just doing what everybody else is doing. So unless we're going to downgrade, globally, everyone's credit rating, everybody's just going to say, well, things have changed. It's different this time, and so we don't have to downgrade anyone.
It's all relative versus everyone else. And my understanding is that Japan is much worse in terms of debt to GDP for a long, long time. Is that correct?
Correct.
You betcha.
Yeah. So if we end up with a credit downgrade, that means cost of financing all this goes up. So there would be some very lengthy calls between Treasury and Moody's, the rating service, before Moody's actually published a downgrade.
Right. Yeah. And if you look at what it costs to service the debt, that amount is actually going down. Because the rates are so low, we're borrowing at zero, virtually, and so while the deficit is increasing a great deal, the debt's increasing, the debt service on that is actually decreasing, and so it's like nothing to see here. Everybody just keep moving along. So when that changes, that's going to be a very difficult place to be.
It's kind of like buying a bigger house, but with interest rates low, my mortgage payment is actually smaller for more house than I had before. Except that here with the government, there's no deadline to pay any of the money back. So this works until it doesn't. And if everybody, if all the central bankers around the world did not subscribe to it, it's a Ponzi scheme and it would collapse. But until somebody actually pulls the bottom card out of the stack of cards, the whole system continues to function. We're not on a gold standard. There is no accountability except at the election box, and if that works with integrity, of which there is some doubt after the last one. take some time to resolve that. Gene, you always have good questions. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Gene.
That opens up a phone line, 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. So is there any hope for downtown Seattle? Well, there are a few financiers, I guess I would call them, who believe that there is hope. KKNR, which is a big money management firm, in conjunction with a local developer, bought a building right downtown Seattle that has been leased to Amazon. I'm not sure they're there anymore. And it is, they paid $580 million for the building at 300 Pine Street, which if you've been around a long time, you think of that as the old Bon Marché. I used to live just up the street there on 8th and Pine in the what was called the tower at the time.
Sure.
I don't know what it's called anymore. But across the street was an empty parking lot, and then the Roosevelt Hotel. I could see right down Pine Street at the Bon Marché and the big Christmas decoration they had on the outside of the building. I don't know if that's there anymore. Anyway, the assumption here is that we can remodel this building, Art Deco that it is, and people will come flooding back into downtown offices.
Been converted to office space, and this is one of the first signs that there are people that are looking at the work from home trend and saying, hey, some of these people are going to go back to work. And Amazon themselves have said, you know, we are planning to return to what they call an office-centric culture, whatever that means. So sometime you're going to spend some time in the office during the work week, and so they're going to need space for that. And this is their fourth purchase, KKR's fourth purchase in the Seattle region. So they are looking at some of this office space being reused, which is a very positive sign. We'll just, you know, at this point, it's still just looking at what they believe is going to happen and taking Amazon at their word that they're going to get people back, at least some people back into the office.
Well, they have to have clear sidewalks and safety.
Yeah, that's a different issue. Yes, but that also that does count. It all counts. But that really would be a boon for any city, of course, to have, you know, thousands of people return to the downtown on a daily basis just to support all the businesses that have been largely abandoned during this shutdown.
Well, there is similar acquisition going on in the major cities where they've had huge drops in prices. San Francisco's one. It looks like the commercial rental space has kind of hit a floor. The question will be whether or not it's temporary and goes further down, kind of like the stock market. It'll drop and you think it's over and then it drops some more.
Sure.
We've seen that happen too often in our lifetimes.
And quite frankly, I can see people returning to the office and, you know, the second week back at the office, looking at each other saying, what are we doing here? You know, why are we doing this? This was working fine without the commute in here. What are we doing? So it's going to be very interesting to see which way that goes. Even with companies like Amazon that say we're going to be office centric. We'll see how that works out.
We have Mick from West Seattle. Mick, you're on the line with Don and Perry.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could expound a little bit on what we can expect from inflation-protected securities once inflation starts taking off. Are they a good inflation hedge?
Well, that's what they're developed to do. I mean, so
I know
they
that's
do.
That's what they're designed to do, but how do you think they'll actually perform?
Well, they actually do that.
They do that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're highly correlated to what's going on with inflation. And the real question is the current run-up inflation expectations sustainable or not? And so far, the Fed thinks not. The market generally thinks the Fed is wrong. But I think the Fed has access to more money. than the market.
Than so, anyone, yeah.
So
well, I'm retired, so I'm really more interested in preservation of capital rather than getting any spectacular gains at this point.
Well, then the tips preserve your capital. They preserve the purchasing power of
the
your capital.
The purchasing power is the key. Yeah, the capital, yeah. But it is protected. But the main thing is protect the purchasing power, because if inflation does kick in, they will gain in value along with it. It's like Don said, it's just a matter of is that going to be a long term? Are we looking at long term systemic inflation, or is this just a reaction to a lot of people coming back online right now? And that's what the Fed believes.
So you're looking for safety there. That's probably a reasonable place for you to be, sir.
Yeah, I'm looking at the fact that you can only hold back the tide of inflation for a certain length of time. Maybe we can beat it this year, but 5 years down the line, it's something's got to give. And I don't want it to be me.
you are not alone with that assumption,
yeah.
Mick. So thanks for your call, Mick.
Okay,
have a great weekend.
I'm holding it to it.
Okay,
very good. Right. Call us back. Let us know how that goes.
you might join our webinar here today, and if you want to do that, go to irradio.com. irradio.com, lower left hand corner. Couple of quick clicks and with your mouse and your name and email, and you'll be able to join us today. And we will be touching a bit on that issue and what we see coming downstream.
Absolutely. We are at the bottom of the hour, Don. Time to get on out of here. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, feel free to give us a call. 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. And as Don just said, we do have our April market update right after the show today, 9:15. And you can register for that at irradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, we actually have some history being made in the market, and it's not just the fact that the market hit a new high, the S&P, but the question here is, are mutual funds actually abandoning mutual funds? Mutual funds have been the mainstay of retirement plan investing, and for the brokerage community, which was absolutely aghast back in the 80s when American Funds abandoned the 8.5% sales charge to go to 6. Most other mutual fund companies working with brokers went to 4. But for some reason, American Funds always is more often the recommended choice. One, they have phenomenal sales literature. And the fact that they happen to have a 50% bigger commission might influence the recommendation a little bit.
Might nudge it a little bit more. That's right.
But most of the mutual funds actually are adding exchange-traded funds. There's actually a fund company, the Guinness Atkinson Asset Management, took two mutual funds and actually converted them to exchange-traded funds, which coincidentally meant the shareholders paid less in fees.
Everybody got a better deal. And we've been telling clients for years, if you're with a fund company, if you're in a mutual fund, you should look in the same fund company for an exchange-traded fund doing the same thing, because they'll have it. They have both. They like to keep the mutual funds there because they make a lot more money on the mutual funds. There are many more fees attached. But this is the first time that a company just said, hey, we're in the mutual fund business. We're just going to convert existing mutual funds into ETFs and move on from there. And our client base gets a better deal out of it. And I expect to see more of that, because this happened pretty successfully. It actually, the conversion went well, and I bet we're going to see more of that. Instead of just more ETFs opening up, there'll be mutual funds converting to exchange-traded funds.
So it lowered the fees, plus it created transparency, which does not exist with mutual funds. It's kind of a Mortimer Snerd. Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it?
But they did. Anyway, we have one other brief piece of good news for most people, and that is April 15th, while it may still be around the corner, is no longer your tax-paying deadline. Well,
not this year.
Tax filing deadline has been extended. If you owe money, they still want it. You know, they do not forget that you owe them money, and by golly, you better pay it on time. But in order to account for what you send them, you have an extra month to get that done. We have Mike from Gig Harbor on the line. Mike, go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I've got a national debt question. I was wondering, do you happen to know, like, what percentage of our national debt is owed domestically versus to other countries? And doesn't it make a big deal? Because, in my opinion, like, if I loan the government money, you know, by buying a bond or something, and the government defaults, what am I going to do, you know? But if China loans the United States money and we default on that, that could be a big deal. China's got more leverage than I do, for sure.
I actually think that's part of China's game plan. They have been financing projects all around the world, and particularly in emerging market countries where they don't have a lot of financial security. And I think the operating assumption is we'll loan XYZ country money to rebuild their port to standards, which will happen to just coincidentally be able to hold our aircraft carriers. And if they can't make payments, we just foreclose on the loan, and it will be our port. It'll now be a military port. Now, with regard to the U.S. defaulting on enough of any debt that would jeopardize the problem or the relationship with China, for the time being, probably in our lifetime, that probability is extremely small. It is theoretically possible because we don't know how we're going to pay any of it back. A large portion of the debt is owned by international countries, and part of the assumption there is you want us to pay you back. You do not want to hurt us. So it's kind of a detente process. But we don't have enough U.S. investors to loan the government enough money to finance the next infrastructure package? Whatever's behind that. We have to use foreign money, and we are probably the largest bankrupt entity in the world, but we're also considered the safest place to stash cash if you're a foreign entity. So, I mean, you raise an interesting conundrum, and I wish I had a clearer answer.
And I did just look it up. In 2018, it was about 30% of the debt was owned internationally, non-U.S. So not the majority, not even half yet.
And the Chinese have been slowly, because they can't dump it, but they've slowly been reducing their inventory of treasuries. And I think Japan did a little bit last year, too. Probably not last year, but it is what it is. And you and I and Perry combined aren't going to swing the weight of the table.
Yeah, no.
So thanks, Mike. That's a good question. Okay. We'll have to ponder it a little bit longer. We've got Ed on the phone. He's been holding on. Thanks again, Ed, or Mike. Ed in Linwood, you have a question on lithium. I'm curious whether you called a couple of weeks ago, because we had somebody else that called on this issue. But you're on the air, Ed.
No, it wasn't me, but that's okay. There's lots of old men, some of which are called Ed.
Thank goodness, yeah.
Lithium is an important part of the new automobile industry. The state of Washington thinks it's going to change all of its diesel engines to battery charged. Who knows where all that energy is going to come from if it isn't diesel or natural gas. So my question is, what's happening with lithium? Is that a place to invest? Is it a place to look stupid or something else? Because there's no way you're going to keep producing that quantity without having a shortage, I would think. Is there something you can tell us about that? Who would you buy? What would you buy? Would you buy a stock of somebody who's manufacturing it or processing it or doing something else? Or do you just stand back and watch and say, I'm confused?
Well, that's a good question. The most direct way to participate in that is with an exchange-traded fund. The ticker for that is LIT, as in lithium. It had a massive run-up from the bottom of the market last year and recently has softened a little bit, but that's in the rare earth metals area, which generally means we get it from China. And China controls a lot of rare earth metals, and we need a relationship with China in order to maintain access to those products, partly because our defense industry is dependent upon them, and it is something that we cannot generate domestically. So the easiest way for you to do that would be to track LIT as an exchange-traded fund. And a lot of that is based on companies that have a need or use it. And there is, it's not just the automobiles, but your cell phone. There's a ton of things that we use electronically. It's almost like semiconductor chips. You need them in almost anything to keep your appliances running, your car running. I mean, you can't work on your own car anymore if you've got a fairly new one because it requires a computer to tell the mechanic what to look for. Anyway, it's a good question.
It's a good story, Ed. It's a good story with lithium coming on. We just think never invest based on the narrative. You have to look at the underlying security and see, is now a good time to own lithium or not? Because there's going to be good times and bad times. We had lithium in our portfolios last year, and then we sold them. You know, we had to move on from it as it as you said, Don, as it softened up. So it's not something that you can just buy and hold. We don't think anything is buy and hold, but lithium is something to keep an eye on. And by the way, Australia is where most of the lithium comes from on our planet.
Thanks. I apparently did not know that.
Well, just one of those. You know how it is. You get that little something sticks, and so for some reason, like Ed said,
I guess my comment is, you're smarter than this than me and 100 other listeners, or 1,000 or 10,000. You might look at it in depth and see what's going on, because somehow there's going to be a problem when GM says we're no longer producing GM gasoline engines. We're going to be making electric ones, and somebody's going to have to provide all that battery. And nothing worse than you can buy an automobile, but you can't get batteries to run it.
That would be bad, yes.
that is bad. And we do not actually have enough electrical grid to charge all those batteries. I mean, that's a pipe dream at this point in time. And converting them into commercial vehicles, that's a much longer-term project than most of the proponents are willing to admit to. You're thinking down the right lane. But I suggest you look up lithium. The biggest holding in the ETF, lithium, LIT, happens to be Tesla.
Oh, there you go.
So it doesn't own direct production. It is basically owning those companies that have a dependence
that are going to use it. Sure. And yeah. Tesla, of course, is backing up a bit now, and that explains a large percent of the softening of the LIT ETF. And it's time for us to get out of here, Don. We're at our last break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that right after the show today, we're having our April stock market update. We're going to go over things that are going on in the economy, what we're looking at right now and the way things are working. And we'll always have plenty of time for your questions. If you've got questions about the economy or the market, or you want a second opinion on something in your portfolio or something you're thinking about adding, today's a great day to get that. Just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page and give the registration link a click, and you will get an email back with a web link in it. You just click that, and you'll be online with us live after the show. Again, that is at iriradio.com. You have plenty of time to get on the air this morning. If you have a question for us this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supply chain problems, the virus, and social distancing are adding to economic weakness. I'm Perry Sykes, and along with Don Creech, we host Investor Resources every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Investors are ignoring falling earnings that have serious consequences. It's like running red lights without an accident. Soon, you think you're good at running red lights, and eventually your luck runs out. By the time most investors know their losses are serious, it's often too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com. Call us at 800-317-9119. Remember, get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be prepared. Register for our next monthly market update at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com.
Well, it's been basically just a few days, over a year, since the market hit the bottom from the pandemic fallout. And we've had a phenomenally fast rebound after a phenomenally fast collapse. Two record-setting events in the bear and bull market history book. Mm-hmm. And we are now trying to figure out, most people are, is this for real? Or do we just simply rely, put our finger up in the air and see which way the wind's blowing? Is this going to last or not? The assumption is that with all this money sloshing around in the market, it's a bull market. And there's a lot of validity to that when there's surplus money available, just like what happened with one of the first payroll support program. The assumption was the government was going to bail out households that were on the verge of collapse, and a lot of the money, it turned out, they weren't on collapse. They decided that they would buy GameStop.
And a lot of them did.
We ended up with a new generation of investors finding out that it was easy to make money in the stock market. Yeah, of course, they're the ones that brag, the ones that lost their money. They went home. They don't stay for the party and tell how much money they lost. That's pretty unusual.
You never hear that story, no. You only hear about the big wins. You don't hear about the big losses.
So part of looking at the market is always a function of what's your starting point and what's your ending point. If you turn around and you look at the market over the last 12 months, it is a phenomenally high return. Look at it over 13 months. It's just average. Ho-hum. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, that's the way things happen. You're supposed to close your eyes. It is, and we get accused of doing market timing, which we don't do. Market timing is usually somebody saying that, well, I think the government's going to do this or the Fed will do that, and therefore I'm going to do this over here. Guessing about what should happen in the market often does not happen. We do trend following. There's a lot of academic research that says once a trend starts, it's very likely to persist, and you stay with it until it doesn't, and then you rotate to a new trend. The economy cycles, and different parts of the stock market respond at different times based on economic conditions. We're going to talk about that in today's webinar. If you have not registered, go to iriradio.com, lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks, your name and email, and you will be set. If you cannot attend today, we'll send you a replay link. You can watch it on your own time. It will be it'll be informative. And all of our webinars are new. We don't recycle. We might recycle a few slides to help make a point, but we don't recycle the webinar. Every one of them's new and unique.
There's plenty of changes month to month to have plenty of fresh stuff in every webinar, and we work on doing that.
So this last week, the S&P 500 managed to finally clear the psychological resistance of 4,000.
4,000.
Nearly doubling from where it was at the pandemic low. And that is a significant milestone. Now, the real question is, can we sustain that? And, you know, the odds are pretty good at this point. The question, there's underlying question is the doubt, like the issues that Gene and Mike have raised with regard to the debt issues. And is there a day of accounting that is going to arrive? It is difficult to time the market. It is even more difficult to stay in it when it is falling apart. And that is what our clients do not want to do, and what last February and March, as we did in 18, our clients sidestepped that decline. We did not go through that gut-wrenching 34% decline in the S&P 500. It was worse than tech stocks.
And that changes everything in your quest for, to meet your goal for whatever you're investing for, your retirement income or your kids' college education or whatever it is. If you don't take those huge steps back, you don't have to worry about, am I at the top of the list all the time? Am I beating the S&P every day of every year? It doesn't matter, because the S&P takes huge hits on the downside. And if you don't participate in the majority of that, you don't have to beat it every day to come out way ahead as far as building wealth going forward. That's the big key. It's more important not to take the big hit than to beat any index all the time.
Well, buy and hold is not an investment strategy. Buy and hold is buy and backfill from my losses most of the time.
You're always making up for what happened the previous quarter when you lost money. And, you know, we've talked about that before. It's like 94% of the time or 95% of the time that the New York Stock Exchange is below an all-time high. So you are almost always at a level below a previous high. So you're always making up for that. The difference is we try not to participate in the downside to the extent that we can. As much as we can, we try to get out of the way. If you're holding a pie chart, you do not even try to get out of the way. You just take whatever comes down the pipe. And if everything's going down together, as it tends to do in a big drawdown, your portfolio drops with it instead of sidestepping that. And that's a huge difference.
And if you're not our client and you're listening to us, the odds are your portfolio is structured on a buy and hold basis. You probably answered some questions with your broker, your financial advisor, and unbeknownst to you, each one of your answers had a numeric value assigned to it. They added those numbers up and voila, you're a 60-40 balanced portfolio. How about that? That's where the majority of investors end up. Maybe you're 55-45, but you're pretty close to that 60-40. And it's basically, you know, the economy comes and goes, the market comes and goes, and you're in here for the long haul. Of course, when you're 81, the long haul has a different definition.
In 30 years, your portfolio is going to be fine. It's like, okay, so when I'm 120, this is going to work out for me, huh? Not good.
Yes. So you want to understand how that works and why it makes no sense. You should be on today's webinar. If you can't join us today, at least register and get a replay link, because this is an issue that we are going to address. Very specifically, a major flaw in the standard best practices portfolio that virtually everyone is exposed to working with a financial advisor or a major website. Register at IRIradio.com, IRIradio.com, and you will learn something new about the market and what you've been told is your safe haven to protect you from major market declines. Well, if we go back to 1999, and that issue has been raised recently, particularly prior to the recent tech sell-off, are we back in a similar kind of conditions? There was a book published back in 1999 called Dow 36,000.
Correct.
And there were a number of books out. There was another one for the NASDAQ, I think, for 40,000. And neither of which occurred right away, because from March of 2000 to March of 2003, everything unwound.
little correction in there. Known as the tech bubble bust. So
So here we are 20 years later, and we're basically pushing up on that 36,000. So it is a matter of your time frame, your frame of reference. These guys who wrote the book, within a very brief period of time, they were considered wacko. You guys don't know what you're talking about. We're not headed to 36,000. We're headed back to 3,000. And anyway, it was a disastrous PR job. I don't know how many books they – that's not one I read, but I do remember it coming out.
Sure.
And here we are now with Robin Hood, Get Rich Quick on your phone app. I mean, you don't even know what you're doing because this is just a game, and that's the way it's presented, which the SEC's not sure it likes that process, but I don't know they can stop that. But we are looking at major issues here in the market, and how are we going to manage to maintain economic growth if we don't have everybody back at work? And there are a lot of people who are not. In fact, we're going to address that issue in our weekend review this week. If you do not subscribe to that, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Weekend review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email, and we will add you to that free weekly subscription on our comments about the market. And you think safety, you think safety's in bonds. Well, we're not going to get to this today. Maybe we'll cover it next week. But bonds, most people are surprised to know, have as much volatility as stocks. You want to join us today for our webinar, iriradio.com. We'll register you very quickly. You'll get a link to join us. I actually have our pre-show stuff already running. You'll be able to know that you are lined up and ready to go. Now, we'll be back on the webinar shortly, and Lord willing, we'll be back here next week. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter.